Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Cavaliers. This is your second episode for Friday, March 9th. I am Chris Manning, the host of the show from FearTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers blog. This show is, again, the second today. Earlier today, you will have heard myself and Lucas Hahn from Locked On Clippers and Clips Nation talk about tonight's Cavs-Clippers game. If you didn't already hear that show, go back, listen to that one. This one will preview Sunday's Cavs-Lakers game with Anthony Irwin from Locked On Lakers, give you a deep dive into what is going to be going on Sunday in L.A., what type of environment it's going to be, Nance and Clarkson playing their old teammates for the first time, a whole bunch of good stuff. Deep dive on the Lakers game. Again, previous game, Clippers game for tonight. This podcast you can save for your Saturday errands and check out and listen then. But here's me and Anthony talking about Sunday's Cavs-Lakers game, and then we'll be back tomorrow morning with a recap of Cavs-Clippers.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, everyone. This is Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs. I'm also the site manager at SB Nation's Fear the Sword, their Cavs blog over there. Joining me today is the host of Locked On Lakers, Anthony Irwin. Anthony, what's going on?
I'm hanging. It's been, we're far enough removed now that I can forget the debacle that was Isaiah Thomas's last, I'd say, 30 seconds of game time against the Blazers last night. I saw Cavs Twitter certainly had their fun with that, and I can't even blame them.
Yeah. Isaiah is certainly going to be, a polarizing guy for a long time. I think that's pretty obvious at this point. But this podcast will be two parts: a preview of what's to come for the Cavs in LA. So they have the Clippers, which the second half of this podcast is Lucas Hahn from Clips Nation and Locked On Clippers, and Anthony leads the way. But Anthony, these two teams made a trade almost a month ago now. Larry Nance coming to Cleveland, Jordan Clarkson coming to Cleveland, Isaiah Thomas and Channing Frye coming to L.A. What for the Lakers has changed since that happened, and how have Isaiah and Channing looked?
Well, we haven't seen hardly any of Channing. He had some procedure done that's kept him out. And frankly, I never really anticipated seeing. I thought he was going to get bought out immediately because the Lakers front court is so crowded. But and I thought that he would want to go to a playoff team. But he came over here, and I want to say it was an appendectomy. I forget what exactly the procedure was. But he has, we've seen like 30, it feels like a blank of time of Channing Frye. And Isaiah Thomas, we've seen more than that. Unfortunately, he's looked good, anywhere from good to, oh my God, this is catastrophically bad. But really, the Lakers didn't make the trade for any kind of on-court production. I thought maybe, you know, people have claimed that maybe it was like a buy low thing on Isaiah Thomas. But really it was getting rid of Clarkson's contract. And that first round pick is going to be more valuable than anything that Channing Frye or Isaiah Thomas provide to the Lakers for the few months that they're Lakers.
Well, Isaiah has already said he wants to be in LA long term, which I had jokes about this on Twitter already.
I also would like to be a Laker long term. But unfortunately, I think Isaiah and I have just about the same same odds or likeliness of being able to pull that off.
So his numbers, Isaiah's, have been better since he went to LA, and he hasn't quite, you know, looked as bad, but he also hasn't been Boston Isaiah. It seems like that burst is still missing the couple times I've watched the Lakers. What is that accurate? I mean, is that what the run on him has been?
So he still doesn't have the explosion to get around anybody, especially without the help of a screen. And even with the screen, you can still see him, like defenders are just closing that gap really quickly. And what he did, which was smart of him, was he started playing pick and rolls as just a distributor. and he took advantage of his reputation. And defenses were closing out harder on him, which created passing lanes and helped him ingratiate himself with rollers like Brook Lopez, Julius Randle, and Ivica Zubac. And it was working fine for a couple games, and then in last night's game against the Blazers, the guys guarding the rollers were backed way off, and they basically told Thomas, well, you're going to have to beat us by yourself in these situations. And he's just incapable of doing that right now, because the guy who was guarding him at the start of those sets is closing that gap really quickly, and he's really short, so any kind of floater and all that is coming from an extremely low release point. And it's just last night, I'm a little concerned that last night was kind of the start of the end of Isaiah Thomas's utility on a basketball court. And look, I said it last night yesterday, I guess, by the time people are listening to this on Locked On Lakers, I don't know if he's an NBA player right now. You have to do too much to make up for him defensively. He is not the offensive dynamo that he was in Boston, which, you know, would help make up for what he did defensively. And at the usage that he kind of sort of needs to be effective, like, no team is going to can play winning basketball and offer that type of usage for him. So, you know, the Lakers are kind of put in this predicament where, and I think they knew what they were getting going in, but they're kind of put in this predicament now that they don't have Jordan Clarkson. They're hoping Isaiah Thomas can provide some of the scoring punch off of the bench that Clarkson did while he was a Laker. And I just don't think Thomas is capable of that. And even when he was succeeding, it was like those pull-up threes in transition that better go in, kind of one of those shots. Like, no. Okay, yeah. All right, that's fine. Go ahead. You can take that shot that time. But even when he was succeeding, it felt like fool's gold. And last night against the Blazers, a good defensive team, mind you, but last night against the Blazers, it was just kind of proven or shown once again that, oh, yeah, that's right, this is an extremely flawed player.
How have him and Lonzo coexisted? It's so weird to me that Isaiah's on a team with Lonzo. They're opposite players and doing all these things, but how have they just sort of coexisted? They seem to be friendly on Instagram, at least, and that doesn't mean everything, because LeBron and IT were very friendly on Instagram, but like, how have these two guys that have egos in their own different ways, how have they existed together?
So first and foremost, like, Lonzo doesn't have an ego. It's a stunt. Like, all of the ego that Lonzo might have had is just stuck with LeVar. Like, LeVar has two egos, enough ego for two people, and Lonzo just kind of somehow made it out of there without developing one himself. Now, maybe that develops as he stays longer in the NBA and he realizes, oh yeah, that's right, I'll have leverage to be able to have an ego. But so from an ego standpoint, Lonzo's mentality allows him and Isaiah to kind of work, because Isaiah does have an ego. He little man syndrome, which I don't even blame him for. He needed that chip on his shoulder to get to where he is in the NBA. But basketball wise, the numbers before last night's game, I haven't looked them up since the game, but heading into it, they were, I think, a net 22 in rating, and it was an extremely small sample size. But just those two guys. So basically, the way I would put it is Isaiah Thomas needs the ball, Lonzo Ball doesn't, and Lonzo gets the ball in and out of his hands faster than I've seen really anybody at that position, and that enables Thomas to have the usage rate or something close to the usage rate that he's grown accustomed to, and so from that standpoint, offensively, they work. And then defensively, Lonzo is – he's frankly one of the better point guards I've ever seen as a rookie defensively. And that helps make up for Isaiah Thomas being maybe the worst defender I've ever seen, period. And so the mix kind of makes sense. But it makes sense from a standpoint of Lonzo makes up for all of Isaiah Thomas's holes. And I haven't really seen – it work in the opposite direction for the fully symbiotic relationship you would hope for between backcourt mates.
The Lakers over the at least a couple games seem to be playing better. What about that? I mean, what about that is going? It has made a difference. What have they done that has made them just look good in a time where all the teams that are at their record level basically have been trying to tank and have actively been trying to just play really, really bad basketball?
That's it right there. The Lakers have no incentive to tank, and the guys at the teams that they're playing do. And so, they do have a couple, you know, beating the Spurs. The Spurs definitely aren't tanking. So that was an impressive win. And frankly, the game against the Blazers felt way more disappointing than maybe it should have, considering the Lakers didn't have Ingram, didn't have Hart. They're going up against the number three team in the West at full strength. And you know, the Lakers were right there. It took Damian Lillard making four threes in a minute and 42 of game time to kind of help seal that one. And still, like, the Lakers had the ball. Isaiah Thomas was shooting a free throw to make it a two-point game. He missed it. They still had the ball with 6 seconds left to tie the game. Unfortunately, Isaiah Thomas had the ball stripped from him. Cavs fans are going to love hearing this portion of the podcast. But he, you know, they were still right there. And I think the number one thing that the Lakers are doing is they got back to their what made them good in the first place, which was defense. They're playing really good defense, and they're letting that create offense for them. And they get out and they play really fast. In the game against Miami, they just blitzed Miami. They had poor Hassan Whiteside and Kelly Olynyk started in that game, and you knew right from the start that those guys weren't going to be able to keep up. And that was a constant theme throughout that game and throughout all of the games in which the Lakers have won or looked really good. They were able to get up and down the court. And because they're terrible in the half court, so when they get up and down, and they let their defense create offense for them, they become a pretty good team, a legitimately pretty good team.
We're recording this very early, just so listeners know. So this needs like an NPR timestamp on it. I'm gonna just do it in real quick, but it's Tuesday, March 6th at 12:19 p.m. Eastern time. So if something changes, just know that it's not because Anthony and I are ignorant. Maybe, but
yeah, I wouldn't go so far as to
say. Yeah, throw ourselves under the bus a little
as
bit.
An excuse.
Yeah, Brandon Ingram has the hamstring injury. Is he going to be back for this game?
I don't think so. He's supposed to miss at least a week, and then they're going to reevaluate. This is one of those situations where he's out a week, and then they reevaluate him. It was kind of weird. So initially, the thinking was that he got kneed in the nether region by Justice Winslow. And then he went back to the locker room and they said hip pointer. And then an MRI revealed a groin strain. So it was kind of a weird kind of sequence of events in terms of injury. So that makes me think that we're probably looking at something closer to 2 weeks that he's out, which is too bad because one thing I give Ingram a ton of credit for is he's done really good at getting up for big games and playing against LeBron. I would imagine he would have gotten up and played a pretty good game against the Cavs, and especially against, you know, with Clarkson and Nance showing up out there. They would have that would have been a fun one for him to take part in. But no, it's probably looking like, you know, he probably won't return until mid-March, I'd say.
We'll get to what you've seen from Clarkson and Nance here in a second, but what do you think the environment of this game is going to be like? I think there's going to be spectacle. I think this is always a game. You and I had talked about this a while ago, that at least for me, this was a game I was circling on the calendar because we would be talking more where the Cavs are at, heading into free agency for LeBron and all these different factors. It's another level now that Nance and Clarkson are going back to L.A. for the first time very soon after the trade. And it's LeBron versus Isaiah Thomas. And just Lonzo Ball happens to be there. And it wouldn't shock me if this is a game where LeVar Ball just shows up. Like, this is going to feel kind of, I think, like a have a spectacle pro wrestling kind of vibe to it in some ways. And I'm very here for that. But what are you expecting the mood around this game to be? Aside from the quality of the basketball, regardless of that, the spectacle of this game, are you expecting something kind of weird like I am?
Yeah, one thing I'm definitely predicting is LeBron is going to look for any opportunity to either dunk on Isaiah Thomas personally or have Larry Nance Jr. jump clear over
so
Isaiah Thomas?
So many LeBron, George Hill pick and rolls where they force the switch and
yep.
or whoever Isaiah's guy is. And just I'm expecting a lot of that because, A, it's,
yeah.
good, it's good offensive strategy, but just funny.
The image of Isaiah trying to check LeBron is not one that Laker fans are going to feel very comfortable with. And then the other thing, too, with this game, there's going to be, like, the hype around it and the response to it, if the Lakers somehow pull off a win, will be incredible. Like, I'll just say it right now. I'm going to troll the hell out of everybody if the Lakers somehow pull out a win. And if the Cavs win, and it's because Isaiah Thomas doesn't play very well, I can guarantee you Ryan Morton's going to do whatever he can to tweak.
I'm sure Ryan has a folder full of drafts just waiting.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's been waiting
yeah.
for this.
And then regarding Clarkson and Nance, I think both of those guys, especially Nance, it's impossible for Nance not to be popular everywhere he goes, not just because of the way he plays, you know, the heady, work hard, you know, lunch pail, kind of all those cliches. But also because, like, he's just a really amicable guy. He's just a really nice dude. And so I'm sure he'll get a nice ovation. And Clarkson, people kind of soured on him after his contract because he didn't necessarily improve after getting it. Or maybe he didn't improve relative to the contract. And so fans kind of soured on him a little bit. But I would still say, but, you know, people were able to take into account and fully contextualize what it was that they saw. And look, Clarkson, he was the only bright spot. His rookie season coincided with Randall's quote-unquote rookie season. And that was where Randall broke his leg 14 minutes into the year. And Laker fans were basically left with a post-mortem Kobe, the worst coach in the history of their organization, the Carlos Boozer, Nick Young, Jeremy Lin experience, which was not fun, and Ronnie Price played a significant role on that team, which is rarely a good thing. And Clarkson provided kind of sort of the only bright spot that year. And I think the fans who understand what it was that he did for the Lakers will probably still give him a nice ovation. I don't think there will be any boos from anybody that night. Partially because those guys are popular and partially because they just weren't important enough to respond negatively to.
Yeah. Whenever Isaiah does play in Cleveland again, going to be fascinating, whatever team he's on next year, the Lakers or some other team. He'd be like a really good point guard for tanking teams.
Yeah. I'm telling you, maybe it changes if he gets fully healthy again, but if I was a team with playoff aspirations, I would stay as far away from Isaiah Thomas as I possibly could. The only role he has is kind of like a low to mid salary point guard on a bad team that recognizes they're a bad team and just tries to sell seats or fill seats with the novelty of having a 5-6 point guard like that. He's just not very good anymore.
Possible head injury, which is a very serious injury. Could mm-hmm. be nothing. So when you look at Nance and Clarkson, we'll start with Nance, who's been, I think, the best Cav that they've got, the best new Cav that the team got. He's, mm-hmm. I think, maybe already the second most popular player on the team. He gets these huge pops. His jersey, I've seen a lot of Nance Jr. jerseys, both in 24 and 22.
Nice.
It's very cool that he gets to wear 22. I think that's a really, really cool thing. He's when I've covered games, he's usually the first one that Fox Sports Ohio, the local broadcast partner, runs to. This is a guy that is hugely popular. He's as we record this, the night before against the Pistons, as listeners will know, he played the best game of his Cavs career. He looked fantastic. Set new career highs in points and in rebounds. From what you've watched, what to you has stood out in how Larry Nance has fit with the Cavs?
So the first thing that has stood out is he benefits so greatly from playing with LeBron and with playing with George Hill even too, because he never really had that kind of, D'Angelo Russell might've been able to get there, but while he played with Nance, that wasn't really the case. That he didn't become the pick and roll player that even George Hill is, let alone LeBron. And so Nance is just kind of enabled. He's allowed to just do everything that Nance needs to do to help a team. He is a monster defensively. He gets after all these loose balls. He has done a better job in switch situations defensively. And so that's enabled, you know, that makes him an even better player than he was in LA. I've also noticed that he's more willing to shoot. I don't know if LeBron pulled him aside and said, hey, you'd better shoot it anytime you're open. You have to let it fly. That was always my number one concern with Larry Nance Jr. was he just didn't want to shoot. And he kept on saying year after year after year that he was working on a shot, and he worked his tail off to develop a three-point shot, and it just never came. And his free throw percentage never particularly improved, which is usually the first thing that people kind of look for shooting improvement. And so those two things, being better in switching situations and also shooting the ball when he needs to shoot the ball, has made him a significantly better player in Cleveland than he was in Los Angeles. And that's just in a vacuum. That's before you take into account how much better he is by playing with LeBron. And frankly, like, you know, Tristan Thompson just got hurt and Larry Nance Jr. started. And I tweeted, I think I quote tweeted you. And I basically said that this feels like one of those kind of turnaround moments for the Cavs where they realize, oh yeah, that's right, this guy should be starting, period. And even when Kevin Love gets back in, is healthy again, I would still play Love, Nance, and LeBron in the front court and try to work out, you know, George Hill, and whether it's J.R. Smith or Rodney Hood, whoever has it going that night is going to get the bulk of those minutes. And you kind of roll with that as the core of your rotation. And he's just... I knew he was going to be really popular out there because of the way he plays. And Harrison and I kind of went back and forth on whether he would be better for a playoff team. I was a little concerned if he never developed an aptitude to shoot or a desire to shoot, I thought that might become a weakness that teams really take advantage of. But if he's willing to shoot and do all of the things that Larry Nance Jr. does, then he immediately becomes, I would say, the second most valuable asset in that trade behind the Cleveland pick that you guys sent over to Los Angeles. But I don't think
that Cleveland pick is all that valuable, though, to be honest.
Well, I think it is from this standpoint. The Lakers didn't have one. And now that they do have one, it enables them to do a few different things, as they try to clear the books for getting a second superstar, or if they do sign one superstar, they can use it to get that superstar immediate help, right? I just think, period, in with today's CBA, with the state of today's CBA, first round picks are freaking gold, and I don't think it's a coincidence that the only first round pick that was moved on trade deadline day was that one that the Lakers got. And I think it was fair. I think it was a perfectly fair trade, mind you. I think the Cavs got exactly what they wanted, especially in Larry Nance Jr. He's been a godsend. And then if Clarkson figures out what role he needs to play in, then the Cavs consider it a huge win. And if the Lakers are able to, if they don't bring back Isaiah Thomas, and they're definitely not going to bring back Channing Tatum. But if they don't bring back Channing Frye, and use that first-round pick either to clear the books further or find another kind of Kyle Kuzma, Josh Hart-esque type of talent, then it's a win-win, a huge win-win for both teams. One of the most fair trades I think I've really ever seen.
I think you're right about the fairness, and I don't want to like litigate that first-round pick. I think for the Cavs, I think what they got, it's whatever they already have. I think for the Lakers, I think it's right in saying, if Lakers are good, and we're gonna rank them, and say that first probably means the most to them. For the Cavs, I think it's fairly low. I think if you look at all the moves they made, it's, you know, I think like the Clarkson money isn't something I love, but I think the pick is also something they have the Nets pick. It'd be different if they didn't have the Nets pick, and it's certainly complicated because of what they owe could owe the Hawks and whatnot. But with Clarkson, he's the guy that I am least enthused by out of the four guys they got, because Hood has had he's had some really good games, and he was very fun in that Boston game on that Sunday that I'm sure everyone can remember the celebration he had with LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
But he's awful at looking for other players on the floor. Like, mm-hmm. It's very bad in my mind when a point guard who isn't Kyrie Irving and isn't as good as Kyrie Irving has a hard time looking for an open Kyle Korver and other shooters on the floor. He's a black hole in a lot of ways to me on this team. And that he has nights where he's going to get hot. There's a lot of nights where he's going to shoot very poorly. I think he's obviously going to be better than Isaiah or better than Derrick Rose or Calderon, but I don't love what he's been, and to me, he's been the worst guy out of what they've had. Now, he's had good games, and you know, Hood's had some up and down moments, and Hill, I think, has been pretty steady, even if he's had some really quiet games. But I haven't loved Clarkson night to night. I don't know how you feel about how he's fit, but I'm very meh on Jordan Clarkson.
So I think Clarkson's role in the NBA is always going to be combo guard that leans way more heavily towards being a shooting guard than a point guard. He just doesn't have the instincts to be a point guard, just period. He's one of those guys who is just – he's so talented and he has the tools to score. And allow him to learn or pick up systems as quickly as one would hope for. Larry Nance Jr. picked up the system, it looks like, immediately.
Hey, Anthony, you cut it out for a second. You want to just start that answer? Yeah. Yeah, and just run from the talking about Clarkson from the top here.
Yeah, are you ready?
Yeah, go in 3, 2, 1.
So Clarkson is always going to be more of a combo guard that leans a lot more heavily to being a shooting guard than a point guard. He's just not... He doesn't have the instincts to be a point guard. The Lakers hoped that they would develop, and that's why they gave him the 4-year, I think it was $46 or $50 million deal that they gave him, and it was with the hope that he develops those point guard skills, and you know they didn't, and so when he goes over there to Cleveland, those kinds of guards I think are the type of guard that you just can't really play alongside LeBron because your scoring and your point and the big things that, you know, the counting stats that you need from a guard, well, that's going to be taken care of by LeBron anyway. So you need your guard, the guard playing opposite him to do all of the small things. And like you said, I thought you said it really well when you said George Hill has been really steady, albeit quiet. Well, that's what you need from your point guard. I mean, Kyrie was a special example, but that's because he's one of the more talented point guards the league has seen in a little while, right? And so with Jordan Clarkson, he's not as talented as Kyrie Irving, and as such, him trying to do the stuff that Kyrie Irving was doing, it was never going to work out. And so what I think the Cavs should really try to do with Clarkson's minutes is make sure he's on the court as much as possible whenever LeBron isn't on the court and try to stagger those minutes as much as possible. And when he's on the court with LeBron, he needs to be kind of smacked upside the head and said, no, dude, you just stand over there and you shoot and you never take more than 3 dribbles, period. We have LeBron. He's going to do all the dribbling in these minutes. And until he figures that out and the Cavs figure that out, I don't think the fit's going to be all that natural. But I do think he does fill an important role for those minutes when LeBron isn't out there. Like I'm interested to see dribble handoff situations and pick and roll situations with him and Kevin Love, because you showed frustration with the way that he can't really find guys. He's really good at finding guys if they're already in the direction that he is dribbling. He's not going to find guys on his peripheries. And so if he gets into a dribble handoff situation, say going to his right and Korver is on that strong side corner, then that's where you'll see, okay, yeah, this guy can actually make that pass so long as we make it as simple as we possibly can. And that's where I would start to find utility for Clarkson.
Wrap it up on this last note.
Mm-hmm.
Two things. One, in short sentence, how do you think has your opinion of the Caps changed since the trade? Do you think they're better off in terms for this season or not? And two, what's something on the peripheral of the Lakers right now that people should know going into this game?
So I think the Cavs are objectively better. I don't think there's nobody out there who can try to make the case that the Cavs aren't a better team now than they were before the trade deadline. George Hill is a huge addition. And basically, if they didn't have George Hill, I'd be nervous about Jordan Clarkson's fit with the team. But because they have George Hill,
I'd have thrown my phone by now, I think. Yeah. Just like going crazy.
Yeah. And so George Hill allows Jordan Clarkson to be Jordan Clarkson. And then Nance, he's been a godsend. There's no other way to put it. He was incredible. And that was against Detroit. That's the kind of front court that you'd be a little dubious about starting Larry Nance Jr. against, right? Because they're a huge front court. Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond are huge. And Clarkson played the best game, not just of his Cavs career, but of his career period. He was incredible. And so, the way I would basically sum it up is the Cavs' best lineup, I think, moving forward is going to be some combination of Hill, whether it's J.R. Smith or Hood, and then obviously LeBron, Love, and Nance. Two or three of those pieces were not there before. and so the trade deadline, they did their job. They made themselves I would say they reasserted themselves as the best team in the East pretty comfortably. And then on the peripheries for the Lakers, the thing that everybody should really kind of pay attention for is Lonzo Ball has shot the ball a lot better since he came back from injury. He had a more quiet game against the Blazers. Yet he still made a huge three-pointer to tie it up, I think, at one point late in the fourth. And so it'll be interesting to see how the Cavs play his pick and rolls. Portland made sure to go over all of Lonzo's pick and rolls, and I think that kind of took him by surprise. So it'll be interesting to see if the guards guarding Lonzo go over or under those pick and rolls and how he handles both of those. And then with Isaiah, the same thing. If Cleveland plays those pick and rolls and makes him a scorer, he becomes pretty much useless on a basketball court. And so it'll be interesting to see if the Cavs watch tape of what the Blazers did against the Lakers and try to replicate that. Another thing to keep an eye on in the Cavs-Lakers game is how Nance and Randle go at each other. They're always friendly. There was never a moment where they were anything but just good teammates to each other and for each other. But they did recognize while they were in LA that their minutes were going to come at the cost of each other. They didn't play well together. So anytime Nance was on the floor, Randle was not going to be on the floor. And anytime Randle was on the floor, Nance was not going to be on the floor. And so it'll be interesting to see two guys who like to mix it up, two guys who competed in practice day in, day out. It'll be really fun to watch those two guys really go at it. And I could just as easily see Nance murdering Randle on a roll to the basket as easily as I could see Randle just obliterating Nance and moving him off of his spot in the pick and in a post situation. That's going to be something with everything else going on around the game, with all the big names and, like you said, the wrestling analogies that are going to be going on all around the game. Those two guys might actually, kind of there might be a moment where they kind of square off a little bit, and that'll be really fun to watch.
It's going to be fascinating. So many different factors in play. No Kevin Love, obviously, but there's no Tristan Thompson, but the Cavs will still have, at least as of right now, should have, otherwise everyone healthy, and Larry Nance will continue to play. Well, it's part of a long road trip for them. It's a weekend in LA. We'll see how they look, and it'll be fun to see them reunite with Channing. It's something that, like, the Richard Jefferson reunion was great the other night. I'm very excited for the Channing Fry reunion in Los Angeles. But Anthony Irwin, find him on Twitter at Anthony Irwin LA, and listen to Locked On Lakers. Thanks so much, Anthony.